Granny said, as she fished in her handbag and took out a stack of money. I'm here to pay the bill. The mayor's face turned bright red, even through her white pancake makeup. She tried to speak, but fell into a coughing fit for several moments before she managed to squeak out,
You what?
I said we've come to pay our taxes. This is the correct office?
The mayor stammered, and looked as if she might lapse into another fit.
Yes, it is.
Very well,
the old woman said, as she placed the stack of cash in the mayor's hand.
$150,000.
Ms. Hart reached underneath the counter and snatched her megaphone. She lifted it to her mouth, pushed the button, and bellowed,
Nottingham!
The feedback rattled Sabrina's ears. A moment later, the foul sheriff hobbled into the office.
I hear you, woman. If you haven't noticed, I'm a little busy. There's a mob outside, and some fool on Mount Taurus swears he's seen a dinosaur running around up there. Can you believe that? A dinosaur? I put him in a cell for being intoxicated.
Who cares?
The mayor bellowed into her megaphone.
The Grimms have arrived to pay their taxes.
Nottingham laughed long and hard, but then seemed to realize his boss was not joking. He slammed his fist down on the counter, cursed, and spit on the floor.
Why, the two of you act as if you're disappointed that we can pay, Granny said,
obviously enjoying the change in mood. Sabrina could have sworn she heard sarcasm in her grandmother's voice. Nottingham snatched the money out of the mayor's hand, flipped through it as if he suspected it were counterfeit, and then slammed it on the table.
We're going to need a receipt,
Granny said sweetly. Mayor Hart snarled. Then she snatched a book of receipts off a nearby desk, scribbled onto one of them, and ripped it out of the book.
This isn't over,
Hart said, dangling the receipt out of the reach of Granny Relda.
Oh, we never doubted that for a second,
the old woman replied, grabbing the receipt. She placed it safely into her handbag, took the girls by the hand, and escorted them out of the office.
Have a nice day,
Daphne said, just before they closed the door. Sabrina heard the mayor and the sheriff scream in frustration as the family walked back down the hallway. They stepped outside, and for a moment the three Grimms gazed down at the throngs of desperate citizens.
These poor people, Granny Relda said. If they had enough, I'd give them all the money they need.
There's not enough money in the world, Sabrina replied. Mayor Hart wants them out of Ferryport Landing. Anyway, we should be worried about us. What are we going to do if we're the last human family left in the town?
I don't know, Liebling, the old woman said as they stepped into the street. But for now, we should get back to our mystery. Who knows when Baba Yaga is going to lose her patience?
Suddenly, Sheriff Nottingham rushed through the crowd, waving a paper over his head.
Oh, Mrs. Grimm!
Sheriff, is there a problem?
Granny asked.
Indeed,
Nottingham said. Sabrina couldn't help but stare at the horrible scar that ran down the man's face. She wondered if that was what made him so ugly, or if he had been grotesque before the knife had done its work.
It appears we've miscalculated the tax on your property.
Oh, a refund, Granny said, clapping her hands.
Bah, the man said with a sick laugh.
The audit on your house failed to calculate the value of the land it is built on. You have nearly 3 acres of incredibly valuable property. I'm afraid we need to add to your tax liability.
How much more? Sabrina said suspiciously.
Oh, just another $300,000,
the sheriff replied.
That's outrageous,
Granny Relda cried.
It is, isn't it?
Nottingham said, as a sinister grin crept across his face.
And when we pay this, what are you going to tax next? The air around the house? You're just trying to get rid of us,
Sabrina shouted.
Well, Mrs. Grimm, your girls are a lot more clever than I was led to believe,
the sheriff said.
By the way, the taxes are still due on Friday.
When they got home, Granny Relda was dazed and distant, talking to herself in German. She made some peanut butter and rose petal sandwiches for the girls and Puck, and then asked Uncle Jake and Mr. Canis for a moment of their time. The three adults climbed the steps upstairs for some privacy.
"This is bad," Daphne said.
"Don't worry, Marshmallow. You'll get used to the cold," Puck said as he slathered mustard all over his sandwich.
"Granny will come up with an answer," Sabrina said angrily. She flashed the boy a look that said, "Shut your trap."
Moments later, Uncle Jake returned. "Good news, girls. I'm going to help you with your case. Your grandmother is a little busy with the financials, but it's nothing to worry about."
"Granny said that yesterday when we only owed $150,000, Daphne reminded him.
"It's all details. Now, where are we on the case?"
"At a dead end," Sabrina reminded him.
"Any suspects?"
"Too many to count," Daphne said.
Uncle Jake scratched his head.
"Well, let's put our noggins together for a second. Both the victims had something magical stolen from them. Whoever or whatever stole the objects was pretty small. The victims were both ever-afters. What else do they have in common?"
Daphne spoke up.
"They're both women."
"They're both very powerful," Sabrina added.
"They were both here the other night," Puck said, without looking up from his fourth sandwich.
Everyone turned to look at him. Sabrina was shocked that the boy fairy had even noticed.
"That's a good point, Puck," Uncle Jake said. "Both of our victims visited us two nights ago."
"Do you think there might be a connection?" Sabrina asked.
"Could be," Uncle Jake said. "Let's go ask some of the others that came by. Maybe they've got something missing, too."
"There were a lot of guests. Who should we see first?" Daphne asked.
Uncle Jake grinned. "Let's go talk to Briar." Sabrina rolled her eyes.
As they drove through the town, Uncle Jake chattered on about how pretty Briar Rose was, how smart Briar Rose was, how he hoped Briar Rose wasn't mixed up in the mystery. After a while, even Daphne got tired of hearing him sing the princess's praises. Puck threatened to leap from the car several times to end his misery, and Sabrina was considering joining him. Luckily, Briar's place of business was not far. Ms. Rose owned a quaint little coffee shop 3 blocks from the courthouse. It bordered the Hudson River, not far from the train station and a tiny marina. Sacred Grounds, as it was called, was a favorite of coffee fanatics. The chalkboard outside promised dozens of different coffees, from espressos to something called a cafe macchiato. It also advertised a variety of muffins, scones, cookies, and donuts. Sabrina had passed the shop many times and noted that it was always jam-packed with customers. Coffee seemed to have the same effect on adults as magic did on her. She remembered her own mother waiting in line for an hour to buy a $7 latte. Once outside the store, Uncle Jake ran his fingers through his hair, blew into his hand to make sure his breath was sweet, and straightened the collar of his shirt. "How do I look?" he asked the children.
"Why do you care? She's just a girl," Puck said. "Girls are disgusting."
"You won't always feel like that," Uncle Jake said.
"Want to bet?"
"You look mucho handsomo," Daphne said, straightening the cuff of her uncle's coat.
Uncle Jake winked at the little girl, then led everyone into the shop. It was wall to wall with people, chatting, working on laptop computers, and sipping from tall, frothy cups of coffee. There were several little tables scattered about, and a bright glass case in the front filled with pastries. There was also a long line of impatient, agitated people. Sabrina spotted Briar Rose behind the counter. Even with her hair pulled back and an apron tied around her waist, she was a knockout. She worked the cash register, ringing up orders and keeping the line moving as quickly as possible, which wasn't easy. Most of the customers wanted coffees with ridiculously long names and detailed preparation instructions.
"I want a large decaf non-fat soy iced latte with sugar-free hazelnut."
"Give me a triple red-eye espresso over lactose-free milk with cane sugar."
"One extra-large chai tea swirl with a dash of fresh cinnamon."
The family got into the line and slowly worked their way to the counter.
"Jacob," Ms. Rose said sweetly when it was their turn,
"Briar," he replied. "You look amazing." The princess blushed. "You always say that."
"It's always true."
"Don't distract her," said a little old woman at the end of the line. "I need my caffeine, and I need it now."
"Sorry, Mrs. Finnegan," the princess said.
"It'll only take a second."
"Come on, pal," a man shouted from the middle of the line. "We've been here a long time."
Sabrina cringed. "They're going to kill us all right here in the store."
"Briar, what is the holdup?"
Mallow Barb asked, as she approached from behind the counter, Buzzflower by her side. When the fairy godmothers spotted Uncle Jake, they scowled.
"Only paying customers," Buzzflower said angrily.
"Hello, ladies, we're happy to buy something," Uncle Jake said. "In fact, we haven't had lunch yet. I suppose we'll take 4 of those blueberry muffins, and I'll have a coffee."
"What kind of coffee?"
Mallow Barb snapped.
"What kind?"
"Coffee, coffee," he replied. The line let out a collective groan, and Mrs. Finnegan could be heard muttering,
"Amateurs."
"Get him the African blend," Briar said to her fairy godmothers.
They gave her a suspicious look, but rushed to fill the order. This gave the two adults a rare moment together without the watchful eyes of the rotund fairy chaperones.
"Any chance you could take a break?" Uncle Jake said.
"No!"
Everyone in the line shouted.
"We're in the middle of our lunchtime rush," Briar explained.
"Just a second," Uncle Jake pleaded, flashing a handsome grin at the princess. Briar Rose laughed and then took off her apron.
"Ladies, I'll be right back," she said, as she tossed her apron on the counter.
The line turned on the Grimms. There was rage in their faces.
"People, try some decaf," Uncle Jake said.
He opened the door wide, ushered the children out, and then bowed deeply as Briar Rose passed.
"Sorry about that," Briar said once they were outside. "Coffee is addictive, and people get angry when they need their fix."
"I've gotten warmer receptions from banshees," Uncle Jake said with a grin.
"At least Mallow Barb and Buzzflower didn't try to turn you into a dung beetle this time," Briar replied.
"I told you I'd win them over."
Briar laughed.
"I had a nice time last night."
"I'm still embarrassed about the meatball," Jake said, blushing.
"I had no idea they were so aerodynamic," Ms. Rose said with a giggle.
"I have to admit, I'm a bit of a klutz. If you keep seeing me, I'm going to ruin your entire wardrobe."
"Well, then you're lucky I like to shop," the princess said.
"Could someone kill me?" Puck begged. "If I have to hear one more word of this mushy love story, I'm going to throw myself off a bridge."
I hate to admit it, but he's right. Aren't we supposed to be solving a mystery?" Sabrina said.
"Well, hello,"
a voice said from behind them. The group turned around to find Tom Baxter crossing the street. He was with 3 young men, all wearing glasses and sweaters. Each wore a button pinned to his clothes that read, "I called the Dr. Cindy Show."
"Nice to see you again," the old man said with a smile.
"Nice to see you too," Daphne said. "Where's Dr. Cindy?"
Tom pointed across the street to a tall building with a huge metal tower on its roof. Granny had once told Sabrina that it was the offices of Ferryport Landing's radio station, WFPR.
"She's busy preparing for tonight's show," Tom said. "It takes a lot of work and an awful lot of planning. But I'm being rude. Folks, these are some of my colleagues. Malcolm is our show's producer, Alexander is our sound engineer, and Bradford fields phone calls. They also help me cross the street from time to time."
Everyone introduced themselves and shook hands.
"I never miss a show," Puck said.
Sabrina turned, half expecting to find the boy laughing, but he was deadly serious.
"What?" Puck said defensively. "You should hear the people that call Dr. Cindy. All of them are sad, depressed, and lonely. It's one of the funniest shows on the radio."
Malcolm frowned.
"Well, we better get our coffee and get back."
"He's right," Tom said. "Cindy can be a real bear when she doesn't get her latte."
The Grimms watched Tom and his co-workers enter the coffee shop. Then they turned back to Ms. Rose.
"Briar, a few people at our party have had some things stolen from their homes," Uncle Jake said.
I don't want to pry, but if something were missing, we suspect it would be something magical. Have you or your fairy godmothers been robbed?
Mallowbarb and Buzzflower don't let their magic wands out of their sight, and all I have at home are a few magic seeds. Everything is accounted for.
Perhaps I should come over some evening and just make sure, Uncle Jake said with a grin.
You never quit, do you? Ms. Rose said with a laugh. Maybe you should ask Frau Pfefferkuchenhaus. Her office is right next door.
Good idea. Kids, do you want to go do that? Uncle Jake said, winking at them. Sabrina didn't have to be a mind reader to know he was trying to get a little alone time with the princess.
Sure, we'll go take a look, Sabrina said, pulling her sister and Puck along.
They walked next door and spotted a sign on the building that read, Dr. F. Pfefferkuchenhaus, Dentist. On the front door was a painting of several happy children with enormous, toothy smiles. All of them were saying, Everyone smiles for Dr. P. in a big cartoon balloon.
What's a dentist? Puck asked.
Sabrina cringed, imagining the cavities the boy must have.
There's a question you don't ever want to hear someone ask you.
The lobby was clean and neat, with paintings of dancing teeth all over the walls. A thin receptionist with eyeglasses that made her look like an owl sat at the desk filling out paperwork.
Welcome to Dr. P's, she said when she looked up.
Her glasses were so thick, Sabrina wondered if the woman might be able to see through her.
Do you have an appointment?
No, actually, we were hoping we could talk to the doctor. Tell her that Sabrina and Daphne Grimm are here. She'll see us.
The receptionist picked up the phone and tapped a few buttons.
Dr. P, I'm sorry. I know you're with a patient. There are three children out here who say they know you. They say their last name is Grimm.
Really?
Of course.
She hung up the phone and got up from her seat.
She'll see you.
She led the group through the hallway past several open doorways. As they walked past, Sabrina could see patients sitting in dental chairs getting their teeth cleaned. The high-pitched squeal of drills filled the air. Somewhere, a man let out a painful groan.
Is this a torture chamber? Puck asked eagerly. Listen to all the suffering. Isn't it cool?
This is a dental office, the receptionist explained. People come here to get a healthy smile.
There was another groan. Puck laughed.
Sure, that guy sounds like he's smiling all right. Are you hiring?
The receptionist brought them to a room where they found the gingerbread witch probing the teeth of a very nervous man in a chair. Sabrina had read the story of Hansel and Gretel and knew the witch's reputation, but at the same time she knew Frau P. occasionally came to the family's assistance. Was she one of the good guys or a villain? Sabrina couldn't be sure. She had certainly never suspected that the woman's day job was dentistry. Hadn't she once had a house made out of candy?
Mr. Easy, can you feel that?
She asked her patient. He had a suction tube in his mouth and Dr. P's fingers on his tongue. The man said no, though with some difficulty.
What about that?
No.
Good. And what about this one here?
The man cried out in agony.
Okay. Looks like you need some more gas, the witch said, covering Mr. Easy's face with a mask connected to a tank by a long tube.
The man took several deep breaths, and his tense hands relaxed their grip on the sides of his chair.
"Hello, Grimms. What can I do for you?" the witch said. "I'm having a special on root canals."
"We'll pass," Sabrina said. "We're investigating a series of crimes. Maybe you've heard about Morgan Le Fay and Baba Yaga's problems?"
"Indeed I have," the witch said. "Let me finish up with Mr. Easy here, and I'll be right with you."
Dr. P. picked up a tiny drill and turned it on. It whined loudly, and then she went to work on the poor man's teeth. The gas she had given him must have been wonderfully strong, as he barely even noticed the awful crunching noises. Puck pushed his way in front of the girls to get a better view of the procedure.
"I think I know what I want to be when I grow up," he said.
"Oh, there's lots of money in dentistry," the witch said over the noise. "People just can't get enough of the sugary sweets, and they rarely floss. I've got appointments backed up for months."
"You mean P
people pay you to do this to them? I thought you had captured these people and brought them here against their will. How do I become a dentist?
You have to go to school, Sabrina said, hoping the thought of an education might deter Puck's sudden career choice.
You do? The witch said, eyeing Sabrina. I didn't know that.
Mr. Easy let out a groan, then mumbled something about seeing her medical license.
What's that? You need more gas?
The witch said, shoving the mask back onto the man's face. Several seconds later, he returned to La La Land.
I used to sell candy out of this place, but once the story got around, I couldn't drag children into the store.
The Hansel and Gretel story? Daphne said to clarify.
The witch nodded.
It ruined my business.
Are you surprised? Sabrina said. You did try to eat them, Daphne added.
Oh, I did not, the witch said, suddenly jerking and making a terrible cracking sound in Mr. Easy's mouth. I was just trying to scare the little brats.
That's not what I read, Sabrina said.
She knew the story of Hansel and Gretel, two children who wandered into the woods and found a house made out of candy and gingerbread. The witch had captured the children and tried to fatten them up so she could devour them. It was gruesome stuff.
Well, you shouldn't believe everything you read. First of all, those kids were out of control, wandering around in the woods, making all kinds of racket. I mean, what kind of parent lets their kids play in a forest? Really, people should have to have a license to have children.
Second, they were eating my house, the witch continued as she went back to work on Mr. Easy's bicuspid. The boy was outside gnawing on the fence. The girl was licking the shutters. Mongrels, that's what they were. I called the police, and you know what they told me? If I was going to live in a house made of candy, I should expect children to come along and eat it. Is that what I was paying taxes for? No. So I took the law into my own hands.
You put them into a cage, Sabrina said.
Puck laughed.
That's so awesome.
It was only for a couple of hours. I fed them too, and trust me, it was the only decent meal the kids had had in a long time. Their mother never saw a carbohydrate she didn't love, and those kids were really packing on the pounds.
That's the part of the story no one's ever heard.
Yes, I fed them, but I gave them a salad. They had no idea what it was. Apparently, they'd never had a meal that wasn't covered in cheese sauce. Well, after dinner, I let them go, and before I knew it, I was being called a cannibal. The only thing bigger than their waistbands was their imagination.
The witch set her tools down and took off her rubber gloves.
Mr. Easy, I've got good news and bad news, she said to her patient, who gazed at her dreamily.
The good news is we're going to be able to save the bicuspid. The bad news, all the other teeth are going to have to come out.
What?
Mr. Easy cried.
You need more gas, Frau Pfefferkuchenhaus said, as she took the mask and put it over her patient's mouth and nose.
Just breathe deep.
Mr. Easy's head was wobbly, and a line of drool was dribbling down his chin.
Mogadinkel bitter spleen, he mumbled.
The witch got up from her chair and led the children out into the hallway.
We don't want to bother you, but we were wondering if anything has been stolen. Say, something magical? Sabrina said.
The ancient witch shuffled uncomfortably and nodded.
I had a small vial of water from the Fountain of Youth.
Why didn't you ever use it?
Puck asked rudely.
It doesn't make you young, she replied with an angry glare.
Can we back up? What does this water do? Daphne said.
It stops you from getting any older. For an ever-after like me, it's worthless. We're immortal anyway. But I thought I might make a little extra cash someday selling what little I have to a human. Unfortunately, when I came in this morning, it was gone. Someone stole it right out of my locker.
Could we take a look at the locker? Sabrina asked.
The witch led the children down a hallway into a small room. There they found a table, some jackets hanging on the wall, and a row of lockers. One of the lockers had the door ripped off its hinges. It lay on the floor in a twisted heap.
Whoever did it was strong enough to rip the door off, the witch said. No, Sabrina said, holding the warped locker door. It pushed itself out from the inside. If someone had ripped it off, the bend would be going in the opposite direction. She looked inside the locker and spotted the woman's handbag. There was a small hole in the side of it, identical to the one in Morgan Le Fay's bag. So, you think whatever stole the water came out of this locker? The witch said. Sabrina nodded. Can you get the vial back for me? The old witch continued. We're going to try, Sabrina said. But maybe you can answer one more question. So far, the Wand of Merlin, the Wonder Clock, and your magic water are missing. Why would someone want those three things? Just then, the receptionist entered the room. Dr. P, Mr. Easy is trying to escape. Give him some more gas and sit on him if you have to. I'll be right there, the witch said. When the receptionist raced back to the patient, the witch turned back to the children. I can't honestly say. They're all pretty powerful items. Any one of them could cause havoc in the wrong hands. I wonder if the crooks are trying to use them all together. All together, Sabrina said. You can do that? Sure. If you combine the properties of different magical items, you can create a brand new kind of enchantment, though you'd have to be a pretty good sorcerer to make sure it didn't blow up in your face. Combining magical items can have unpredictable side effects. Listen, I've got to run. The teeth don't pull themselves. If you find anything, let me know. The witch darted down the hallway and left them alone. So, what have we learned? Daphne asked, doing a funny impression of their grandmother's German accent. Then she pretended to get out a notebook and pen and jot down notes. I learned that you need no formal training to be a dentist, Puck said. The Lilliputians and the mice are no longer suspects, Sabrina said. Neither are strong enough to rip a steel locker door off its hinges, unless they were on steroids. I'm lost, Daphne said. Three break-ins, all done by something small and sneaky. We're going to have to go through the journals again. The children exited the office and found their uncle and Briar Rose exactly where they had left them in front of the cafe. Any luck? Uncle Jake asked, when he finally noticed that they were waiting for him. A little, but we need to get home, Sabrina said. The adults both frowned, but Uncle Jake eventually shrugged. He took the princess's hand and kissed it. Until we meet again.
Okay, enough, Puck cried. If I have to, I'll turn a hose on you both.
Uncle Jake scowled, but before he could complain about them ruining his romantic moment, there was a terrible rumble, as if a tiny earthquake was erupting directly beneath the town. The tremors continued to grow in power, and then an explosion rattled the windows of the coffee shop. The noise had come from up the street. They all turned in that direction and found an unwelcome yet familiar sight. Baba Yaga and her house were stomping through town, in full view of humans. Worse, the witch was shooting buildings with fireballs emanating from one of her magic wands. Chapter 5
I want my property! The witch shrieked.
Briar, you might want to get to safety, Uncle Jake said as he began digging in his pockets.
What about you? Briar cried.
Don't worry, I'm a Grimm. This is what we do. Sabrina watched the princess run and wondered if she and her family should do the same. The witch was tearing through town, blasting one building after another. She screeched at the top of her lungs to be heard over the explosions and rumbling footsteps.
Look at her! Puck shouted. She's horrible! She's like my soulmate!
The house came to a stop outside the coffee shop and then bent down so that Uncle Jake's face and Baba Yaga's were a few feet apart. The witch breathed heavily and growled like an angry dog.
Let me guess. You haven't had your coffee, Uncle Jake said. I'll run in and get you one and you'll feel better right away. How about a muffin to go with that? I hear the blueberry is to die for.
Baba Yaga shrieked again.
Have you got my wands, Grimm?
Uncle Jake shook his head sheepishly.
Then I will find it myself, and woe to anyone who stands in my way!
First, who uses the word woe anymore? Jake said. Second, are you planning on burning the town down until someone confesses?
Baba Yaga nodded.
Step aside, Jacob! No can do. You see, this store is owned by my would-be girlfriend. I can't let you burn it down. But if you have to destroy something, the tax assessor's office is just up the block.
Baba Yaga lifted her hands, and a ball of fire appeared in them. It grew and grew, and when it was as big as a beach ball, she wound up like a major league pitcher.
Uh-uh, Uncle Jake said.
He took a small green amulet from one of his pockets and held it above his head. A light shot out of it and rose high into the air, then arced down and slammed into the ground, as if it were more than particles or waves, but one solid heavy mass. The ground shook, and a tremor rose up like a mighty ocean wave, buckling the concrete and toppling Baba Yaga's house. The hut's hideous legs flailed as it tried desperately to right itself. Unfortunately, it wasn't long before it was back on its feet and stomping around angrily.
"What now?" Sabrina said.
"What do you mean, what now?" Uncle Jake said. "That should have taken care of her."
And then something happened that surprised even Baba Yaga. A thick black storm cloud appeared overhead. The wind swirled viciously, whipping across the street and ripping the awning off the front of sacred grounds. There was a flash of lightning and a loud explosion, and then, as if they had stepped out of nowhere, a dozen men in loincloths and painted faces appeared. They were bare-chested and shoeless, and their skin was dark and tanned. A few held tomahawks in their hands. Some had long spears, and others had bows and arrows. To Sabrina, they looked as if they had stepped out of the Native American exhibit at the Museum of Natural History. The men scanned the area and seemed to understand that the house was a threat. They trained their weapons on Baba Yaga and shouted to one another in an odd, guttural language Sabrina couldn't understand. One of the men bellowed and charged the house. The others followed, attacking with ferocious might. Their spears stabbed at the house's legs, causing it to hop up and down. Sabrina watched as Baba Yaga tried to cast a spell, most likely against the men. But with the house rocking back and forth so much, she couldn't keep her balance. Some of the men launched their arrows at the windows, and the witch had to dive out of the way to avoid being hit. A few of the arrows stuck into the sides of the house, and Sabrina sensed that the odd shack was in pain. Other men climbed the legs of the house, taking advantage of its confusion, and smashed their tomahawks into the walls. Pieces of wood splintered and fell to the ground.
"Nice work," Daphne said to their uncle. "I didn't do this," Uncle Jake said, completely flabbergasted as he looked down at the little amulet. "At least, I don't think so."
Nottingham raced down the street with his dagger in hand. He came to a screeching halt when he spotted the strange scene in the middle of the road.
"Your little butter scraper isn't going to do much," Uncle Jake said to Nottingham as he pointed to the rows of burning buildings. "We've got a bigger problem now anyway. We need the fire department."
Nottingham's face turned red.
"That's not possible."
"What? Why?" Sabrina demanded.
"The fire department was disbanded. The mayor had to make cuts, and there wasn't room for them in the budget. Charming left us with quite a debt, you know."
"What are we going to do?"
Sabrina yelled, as the strange men fired another volley of arrows at Baba Yaga's shack.
"I'll handle it."
Uncle Jake fumbled around in his pockets. He took out a golden ring, placed it on his hand, then rubbed it against his coat sleeve to shine the brilliant emerald at its center. He whispered something into it, and it lit up like a brilliant firecracker. A moment later, the sky emptied buckets of water down on everything. There was so much rain that Sabrina could barely see her sister to grab her hand. The rain swallowed up the flames, saving the town from imminent destruction. When the rain slowed, Sabrina realized that the bizarre storm had vanished, along with the men and their weapons. All that was left was a bewildered Baba Yaga and her damaged home.
"I am not finished!" Baba Yaga cried as she craned her head out of one of her broken windows. "I'll be back!"
The house turned and stomped back down the street the way it came.
"Native Americans?" Granny Relda asked.
Uncle Jake nodded. "That's what they looked like to me."
Mr. Canis groaned. "And where are they now?"
"They vanished the way they came, into thin air," Uncle Jake said, examining his amulet.
"I wonder how Mayor Hart will clean up that mess without a coven of witches on her side. The three used to take care of those kinds of things when Charming was in charge," Granny said.
"That's her problem now. We still have to deal with Baba Yaga," Mr. Canis replied. "The truth is, someone has to keep an eye on her. I should track her and make sure she doesn't get too close to the town."
"No," Granny Relda said. "Jacob will take care of that."
"Me?" Uncle Jake cried. "She threatened to eat me once."
"I'll go with you," Puck said. "I'm learning a lot from the old witch."
"Fine. Mr. Canis, I was hoping you would look after the girls," Granny suggested.
"What about the case?" Daphne said.
Granny shook her head.
"Liebling, I'm afraid we're going to have to put detective work on hold. There are too many emergencies to deal with, and we can't be everywhere at the same time."
"But,"
Sabrina started, but her grandmother threw up her hands.
"We just can't. Now, I have to get ready. Ms. White has agreed to take me to the bank. I'm applying for a loan to pay our taxes."
Everyone darted off in his or her own direction, leaving Sabrina and Daphne alone with Mr. Canis, who didn't look at all happy to be stuck with the girls.
"So,"
Sabrina said, as she eyed the old man. His upper fangs had started to creep down his lips.
"So,"
he huffed.
"You're babysitting us, huh?"
Mr. Canis raised his eyebrows, acknowledging his new role.
"Want to play a game?" Daphne asked. "We've got Candyland."
Mr. Canis shifted uncomfortably.
"No!"
Daphne cried as she jumped to her feet.
"I know what we can do. We can play dress-up."
Sabrina couldn't help but laugh.
"Perhaps we should continue with our tracking lessons,"
Mr. Canis said to the girls.
"Put on your boots. We still have a few hours of daylight."
Mr. Canis led them around the back of the house and deep into the woods. The ground was muddy, and there was still a chill in the air, but little buds were sprouting on tree limbs. Sabrina couldn't remember the last time she saw something growing, but soon spring would be in full bloom. Sabrina wondered what the forest would look like when it was fresh and alive. They climbed along a small ravine and up a hill littered with sharp stones, then down into a gulch. A tiny creek trickled along with shards of ice floating on top of it.
"Are we about to lose the house?" Daphne asked the old man.
"Your grandmother is a resourceful woman," Mr. Canis said.
"That's not an answer," Sabrina said. She didn't want to anger the old man, which had become increasingly easy to do, but she needed him to be honest with them.
"She will not let you down, girls. In the time I have known her, she has never failed or disappointed. I trust her. You should as well."
$300,000 is a lot of money," Sabrina pointed out.
"Yes, it is," the old man replied. "Fortunately, this situation will benefit you in your training. Stress is an enemy. It confuses us and makes us question ourselves. The calm, rational mind is the one that finds answers in difficult times. Remember, you will not always have the carefree lives of children, but you will always be Grimms, and you will have to find ways to set aside private matters."
"So you want us to forget about the tax bill?"
Daphne said.
"The $300,000 tax bill?"
Sabrina added. Mr. Canis took an impatient breath.
"Close your eyes."
The girls did as they were told.
"In the past, we have tracked deer and rabbits as well as the family dog. You've learned to follow and recognize the prints of many wild animals. Today, you will follow the prints of the most dangerous animal of all, me. I will hide from you in this forest, and you will have to use your senses and what I have taught you to find me.
Your grandmother has achieved great skill at this with practice, and she uses these talents quite frequently. Remember, use your senses. Learn to trust what you see, smell, hear, and feel. Allow them to work together, and you two should have no problem locating me.
I've got a question, Daphne said. There was no response. Mr. Canis?
Sabrina opened her eyes. The old man was gone. She pinched Daphne softly, and the little girl looked around.
Well, that was mucho rudo, Daphne complained.
Sabrina scanned the dense woods. Canis was nowhere in sight, but he had left a trail in the snow. Following it wouldn't be too difficult. After all, in his semi-altered form, Mr. Canis had what amounted to size 22 shoes. Sabrina pointed to the tracks.
He went that way.
The girls followed the footprints through some heavy brush. The old man's path showed he was running in one direction and then cutting back in the other, obviously trying to confuse them.
Are we really going to have to live in a refrigerator box like Puck said? Daphne asked. I don't think we'll all fit in a refrigerator box. Mr. Canis won't for sure, and what about Elvis?
I guess we could get a washing machine box for him. We could even decorate it and cut out some windows. The little girl rambled on, describing how, with a little creativity, they could turn an old cardboard box into a two-story colonial, while Sabrina led her along the trail Mr. Canis had left. It took them up a steep climb, but they found a couple of branches that doubled as walking sticks that helped their ascent. At the top of the crest, they found more trees, but Mr. Canis's footprints had disappeared.
Where did he go? Daphne asked.
Maybe he's soaking in our cardboard box jacuzzi, Sabrina replied.
Okay, fine. I'll concentrate, Daphne grumbled. It's just I wish I had a magic wand or a crystal ball.
Sabrina scanned the area but saw nothing.
He couldn't have just vanished into thin air, but... Look, Sabrina said, pointing up at the trees.
She saw dozens of limbs splintered and broken, with fresh yellow wood erupting from their rich brown bark.
He jumped up there and grabbed those branches. They snapped when he swung to the next tree.
I thought he was a wolf, not a monkey. Sabrina scanned the next tree and saw a similar limb.
Then he swung over there.
See? Daphne said. You're mucho excelento at tracking. Sabrina swelled with pride. Her sister was right. She was good at tracking.
Thanks, Sabrina said, as she pointed toward a row of trees. He went that way.
The girls held hands and continued through the woods. It dawned on Sabrina that this was what Puck must have done when he was stalking them during escape training. He used their environment against the girls, finding the little clues their feet and bodies left behind. With a keen eye, the woods could become like a road map, leading them to their destination. It wasn't long before they found another set of Mr. Canis's footprints that led to a churning brook. There, his trail ended. Sabrina studied the banks of the stream and searched the trees, but saw nothing.
What now?
Close your eyes, Sabrina told her sister. He told us to use all our senses. She stood quietly, trying to sort through the noises around her. The bubbling water, the creaky branches swaying in the breeze, a bird chirping high in the trees. And then she heard it. A twig snapped in the brush nearby.
He's in there,
Sabrina said, pulling her sister along. They pushed through the bushes, even getting on their hands and knees to crawl through. It wasn't easy, and the girls were filthy, but that was the least of their worries. Without warning, the gray sky had filled with dark clouds, and a storm swirled above. A crack of thunder shook the trees, and bolts of lightning burst out of a black hole in the sky. It looked just like the storm that had occurred when the odd men had attacked Baba Yaga, and the one on the night Sabrina had imagined Uncle Jake's death.
"Maybe we should call it a day," Sabrina said, as she examined the troubling storm.
She turned to crawl back the way they came. Once through the bushes, she struggled to her feet and helped her sister do the same.
"Mr. Canis!" Daphne shouted. "We're going home!"
"A storm is coming!" Sabrina shouted.
Can you hear us, Mr. Canis?
I don't know if Canis can hear you,
a growling voice said from within the bushes,
but I certainly can.
Sabrina studied the brush, trying to find the source of the strange yet familiar voice. She heard rough laughter that seemed to come at them from all sides. Finally, she spotted a pair of eyes peering back at her, and then a monstrous figure pushed forward, uprooting an unfortunate tree that was in its way. When the creature was out in the open, Sabrina nearly screamed. Standing before her was a wolf as big as a grizzly bear, though it stood on its two back legs like a man. It snarled and snapped at Sabrina as it looked over the girls curiously.
"The wolf!"
Daphne gasped. The girls stumbled backward and fell to the ground. Sabrina's mind was reeling. What had happened to cause Mr. Canis to lose control of himself? Why had he let the big bad wolf loose? The wolf stomped forward, shoving its snout into Daphne's face and blasting her with a foul spray.
"Don't try to run, girlie,"
the wolf said as he snatched Daphne by her coat and lifted her off the ground.
"You'll just build up my appetite."
Sabrina was terrified, but she couldn't let her sister be hurt. She leaped to her feet and rushed at the wolf with her fists clenched. She was met with a painful backhand that sent her slamming into the ground. Her shoulder fell hard on a stone. She cried out and forced herself to stand. Her arm didn't feel broken, but the pain was excruciating. She knew fighting was pointless. "The wolf is too big and strong, but I have to do something." She spotted a sharp black rock on the ground, snatched it up, aimed, and flung it as hard as she could. It hit the wolf and bounced off his chest like she had tossed a peanut at him.
"Was that supposed to hurt?"
he laughed. "No," a voice said from behind Sabrina. "But I bet this will." A flaming rocket blasted past Sabrina and hit the wolf squarely in the chest. He howled and fell backward, releasing Daphne, who tumbled to the ground. Sabrina rushed to her sister's side and dragged her away, then turned to find out who had saved them. Two women were standing behind her. One was tall and fierce with long blonde hair and a deadly-looking sword in her hands, as well as an array of weapons strapped around her waist and legs, including daggers, grenades, and a whip. The other woman had dark brown hair and wore a long trench coat that had hundreds of extra pockets sewn into it. It looked just like Uncle Jake's coat. The brown-haired woman was also adorned with necklaces and jeweled rings, one of which was glowing. Her expression was stern and serious, like hardened steel. She was beautiful, but her face was marred by a horrible scar. "You're not going to touch them, mutt," the blonde woman said, waving her sword in the air. "Or someone is going to get fixed," the woman in the coat added. The wolf clambered to his feet and eyed the women.
"Back off. These are my kills."
"You back off, or I'll take your other eye," the woman with the sword replied. It was then that Sabrina noticed that the wolf's left eye was white with blindness and framed by an ugly scar. The monster growled and leaped at the blonde woman. She swung her sword and hit the beast in the arm. The wolf shrieked and swung back, hitting her so hard she flew against a tree. The brunette rubbed the glowing ring against her jacket, and another blast rocketed at the monster. The wolf leaped out of the way, dodging the projectile by inches. The woman with the sword sprang to her feet. With the wolf in pain and confused, she climbed up onto his enormous back, raising her weapon high over his head. She brought the hilt down hard between the beast's eyes. He staggered, dazed.
"He's all yours, sister,"
she shouted to her companion. The dark-haired woman pulled a wand from inside her coat. She flicked her wrist and said, "Give me some chains," and a ray of light shot out of the wand's tip. The woman's aim was perfect, and a stream of particles fluttered out of the wand, forming a chain so thick it looked as if it could tie down a battleship. The chains themselves weaved around the wolf, binding them tightly. He struggled, snarling and snapping at the women, but he was momentarily helpless.
"Who are they?"
Daphne whispered to her sister.
Sabrina searched her memory for any reference to a couple of tough chicks who could take down the big bad wolf. She'd never read anything in the family journals about them.
I was hoping you would know.
The blonde woman turned to Sabrina and looked at her closely. Suddenly, her confident face turned pale, as if she had just seen a ghost.
"It can't be," she began.
But she didn't get to finish. The wolf broke loose from the chains with a powerful shrug. He pounced forward, slamming into the women and knocking them both to the ground.
"I've been waiting a long time for this meal," the wolf said, licking his huge jaws.
"Uh-uh-uh,"
said a voice from above them. It was deep but had a playful boyish quality. Sabrina looked up and saw a man with golden hair descending from the trees. On his back were a pair of huge insect-like wings.
"I hate it when people threaten my family. It's so, well, rude."
An arrow flew from the crossbow in his hands. It hit the wolf in the leg, and the monster bellowed, crashing to the ground. The fairy attacked again, his head morphing into that of a saber-toothed tiger. He sunk his heavy fangs into the monster's back, and the wolf shrieked.
"We need to go get help," Sabrina said to her sister.
She snatched the little girl by the sleeve and pulled her into the woods, leaving the battle behind.
"But the house is back the other way," Daphne cried.
"We're not going to the house," Sabrina said. "Granny's at the bank, and so is our secret weapon."
Chapter 6 The girls hurried through the woods, clambering over rocks and down hills until they finally found a road. It was there that Daphne pulled away to catch her breath.
"We should go back home and get Uncle Jake," the little girl said.
"He's not there, remember?" Sabrina said. "Everyone is out running errands."
"But what about those women and the fairy? We can't just leave them back there. He'll kill them,"
Daphne argued.
"I think the three of them can defend themselves," Sabrina said, as she scanned the edge of the forest in case the wolf had indeed slaughtered the odd trio and was now on their trail.
"Besides, we're just a couple of kids. We need help if we're going to try to stop Mr. Canis."
"What kind of help?"
Sabrina approached her sister.
"You remember the key that Mr. Hampstead gave us before we left New York City?"
Daphne slipped a hand inside of her shirt and pulled out a necklace. Dangling from its end was a small silver key with several numbers engraved on its side.
"This?"
Sabrina nodded.
"Remember, Hampstead gave us this and told us to use it only if Mr. Canis ever lost control of the wolf. It opens a safety deposit box. Hampstead said there was a weapon inside that could stop the wolf in his tracks."
Daphne looked down at the silver key.
"What's a safety deposit box?"
"It's like a safe. You put your valuables in it. They keep them at the bank."
"That's where Granny is."
"I know. She can help us too."
Sabrina took Daphne's hand.
"We have to hurry."
Unfortunately, the road they were on was the long way to town, and it took several hours of steady walking before they came across any hint of civilization. The first thing they recognized was a farm they had driven by many times. Granny had told them it was owned by Old MacDonald, the farmer from the famous nursery rhyme. But as they approached, they were shocked to see that the farm looked as if it had been abandoned. The fields were overgrown with weeds, the barns were falling down on themselves, and the cattle pens and livestock houses were empty. As they got closer, they realized that the farmer's house had been destroyed by a terrible fire. Oddly, the destruction appeared to have occurred long ago.
"What happened?" Daphne said,
asking the question Sabrina had knocking around in her own head.
"I don't know," Sabrina said. "Did Granny mention this?"
Daphne shook her head.
"Come on,"
Sabrina continued. "We can't hang out here all day. I think we've got another half an hour of walking before we get to Main Street." They soon came across the rusty railroad tracks that ran along the Hudson River and led to the train station in the center of town. As they walked along the tracks, they saw more surprising scenes. The stern of an enormous sunken ship was sticking out of the water. Several broken-down cars lined the grassy beach. When they finally stepped into town, they noticed a sign above the train station. It had once read, "Welcome to Ferryport Landing,"
but someone had crossed out the ferry port and added a more sinister message. The sign now read, "Beware, you are now entering Fairyport, F-A-I-R-Y-P-O-R-T, landing." Even more shocking was the state of the town. The little shops were abandoned, their doors torn away and windows broken. Many stores were in flames. There were sounds of fire alarms in the distance, but no sign of any fire trucks. The streets were deserted, riddled with potholes and smoldering automobiles. Sabrina couldn't believe what she was seeing.
"I guess Uncle Jake isn't doing such a good job of keeping Baba Yaga in check."
"This is going to take an awful lot of forgetful dust," Daphne said, as she gaped at all the destruction. When they came upon the bank, they were stunned to find the building was nothing but cinders. Everything inside it was burned to a black ash, including the teller's windows, the ATM, and most important, the safety deposit boxes. There was nothing left.
"Granny!"
Daphne cried, nearly in hysterics. Sabrina reached down and scooped up a handful of ash. It was cool to the touch.
"Daphne, this happened a long time ago," Sabrina said, trying to reassure her sister while deciphering the puzzle before her. "If the bank burned down this morning, why is the ash cold?"
Sabrina looked around at the little town. The streets were empty. In fact, there wasn't a living soul in sight. Where were all the people?
"Something's wrong," she said. "I must be having another hallucination."
"Well, I'm having the same one you are," Daphne said. Suddenly the street went dark, as if something had blocked out the sun. Sabrina watched an enormous shadow zip across the street and vanish. The sunshine returned as fast as it disappeared.
What was that?"
Daphne said nervously. Sabrina scanned the skies.
"Must have been a cloud."
Just then, there was an enormous roar, like the angry threats of a thousand lions. It rattled Sabrina's ears as well as a loose shard of glass in the window of Dr. P's abandoned dentist office. The glass fell from its frame and broke on the pavement.
"Clouds don't make noises like that," Daphne said. "Clouds don't make noises at all."
Sabrina continued studying the sky. She spotted something far off on the horizon. At first it was tiny, no bigger than a bird. But as it approached, Sabrina could see that it was actually quite large and incredibly fast. As it drew closer, Sabrina could make out its bright red wings, which spanned the width of a football field. They supported a huge reptilian body covered in scales and a long tail that slashed through the air. The creature's neck was snake-like, and it had enormous teeth. Sabrina had seen a drawing of it in an old children's book. She had even seen a movie about a kid who had one as a pet. But this thing was no pet.
"Run!"
Sabrina yelled as she latched onto her sister's hand. Together they sped down the broken street, dodging potholes and burned-out cars.
"Sabrina, is that what I think it is?"
Daphne shouted over the monster's wail. And then the creature fell from the sky and landed in their path. It crouched down, almost like a cat, and sniffed the air around them. Its breath smelled of fumes and sulfur.
"Yes, it's a dragon," Sabrina whispered.
The creature roared once more, and a blast of blisteringly hot air danced across Sabrina's skin. Luckily, the beast was too far away to burn them.
"Heads up, kiddies," said a voice from above.
Sabrina looked to the sky, sure that the voice belonged to their only hope, Puck. But it wasn't Puck. Instead, it was the strange fairy they had encountered in the woods. He fell out of the sky like a missile and planted his feet on top of the dragon's snout. The impact forced the beast's chin into the pavement, stunning it for a few moments. Then it reared back and belched a ball of flame at the fairy. The winged man was quick in the air, darting back and forth with amazing speed and agility, and the deadly missile never reached its target. But the dragon was not discouraged. It let loose a dozen more blasts at the flying man, edging closer to him with each attempt. Luckily, the fairy steered the monster away from Sabrina and Daphne.
"You have to come with us,"
said a voice from behind them. The girls spun around to find the blonde warrior woman. She had her sword drawn, while her sister, the dark-haired woman, was holding a wand that glowed with green energy. "We're not going anywhere with you," Sabrina said, stepping in front of her sister. She clenched her fists and snarled, preparing for a fight if the older women wanted one. She set her feet the way Ms. White had taught her, but before she could even take a swing, the fairy snatched her and Daphne off the ground and hoisted them onto his shoulders like they were a couple of sacks of potatoes. "There's no time to explain," the fair-haired woman said. "We have to get to safety. If they find you out here, they will kill you."
"Who?" Daphne cried. "Who will kill us?"
"The Scarlet Hand." Sabrina and Daphne shouted a million questions, but every one was ignored. Instead, the dark-haired woman reached into one of the many pockets on her jacket and took out what appeared to be a tiny blue marble. With her other hand, she snatched Sabrina by the arm. The blonde woman grabbed Sabrina by the other arm and then latched onto Daphne. "Don't forget about me," the fairy said, as he planted a kiss on the blonde woman and put an arm around her waist. A moment later, Sabrina felt energy swirl around her body. It seemed to invade her pores, rush through her bloodstream, and dance on the edges of her mind. She looked over at her sister to find that Daphne's hair was standing on end, and she had to assume her own was doing the same. There was a bright flash of light, like someone was snapping a picture, and then Sabrina felt a far more peculiar sensation. It wasn't uncomfortable or painful, but it felt as if her body was being folded neatly into halves, then folded again, and again, and again, until she was a tiny fragment of herself, so small she was invisible. And then she was folded once more and vanished from existence. When the lights came on, Sabrina found herself lying on a pile of rags in a filthy room. Scattered about were musty books, old furniture, and boxes of odd trinkets. She scanned the room, puzzled by its familiarity. She had been here before, but where was here? She looked up at the filthy chandelier, and then at a table covered in potions and odd books. One of them, she could clearly see, was bound with what looked like human skin. She fought a wave of revulsion.
"We're inside Baba Yaga's house," Sabrina croaked.
"What?" Daphne said groggily. The little girl was lying right next to Sabrina.
"I was having a dream about ice cream."
"Do you know how we got here?" Sabrina asked. Daphne shook her head. "It's really freaky," a voice said from behind them. Sabrina spun around to find the grown-up fairy sitting on a chair, watching over them. "When is your birthday?"
"It's in 2 days," Sabrina replied suspiciously. "I'll be 12.
Just then, the warrior sisters entered the room. Sabrina studied them, noticing the scar that ran along the dark-haired woman's face. It started at the bottom of her earlobe and ran down to just below her chin. It was an ugly wound, and from what Sabrina could tell, fairly fresh.
"I don't remember this happening," the fairy said to the women. "But then again, you two were always running off on your own."